You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for November 6, 2015. This week, I'm going to talk about the modified Valsalva technique for terminating PSVT, the Department of Justice settlement on ICDs, combat injuries and the risk of future diseases, Dr. Robert Califf for FDA Commissioner, and the American Heart Association preview. Now, first is a new technique for SVT termination. This was a randomized controlled trial. The active treatment arm was four times better than the control arm. The study was published in the prestigious Lancet Journal. Now, these things got my attention. So in patients who present to the emergency department with PSVT, supraventricular tachycardia, the modified Valsalva technique terminated the arrhythmia in 43% of cases versus only 17% in patients with the normal Valsalva technique. There were no adverse effects with the modified technique, and fewer patients who had that technique had to have adenosine. Now, basically, the modified Valsalva technique is a normal Valsalva, but right after the bearing down, patient is put supine and an assistant raises the legs up. The Lancet Journal has a nice video just showing what this looks like. I really love this study. I mean, I'm very excited about it. It is a simple, elegant, conclusive study, and I really am drawn to the fact that it allows patients to get fewer doses of adenosine. I don't like adenosine. I know that sounds like heresy to some ER doctors, but I know that the drug works, but there are nicer, more gentle, humane ways to terminate SVT. Adenosine causes extreme pauses of the heart rhythm. It gives people a wave of panic, and it just really is abrasive in my mind. Think about SVT. In the majority of cases, this is a benign arrhythmia. It doesn't need to be treated so aggressively. I rarely use adenosine to break SVT. I was recently called to terminate SVT in a nurse here at the hospital, and we simply used reassuring measures. We lowered adrenergic tone, sympathetic tone, and we got the tachycardia to terminate without giving the heart-stopping drug. One thing that you learn from being in the EP lab is that SVT tends to persist when sympathetic tone is high, so one of the best ways to terminate SVT is to simply stop the adrenaline infusion or the isoproterenol infusion. And adenosine isn't free either. It comes with risks. It causes a burst of adrenaline. It shortens the atrial effective refractory period, and those two things in combination can induce atrial fibrillation in a not-so-small number of patients. And the other thing is the drug's gone in 30 seconds, so the patient who has SVT can recur a few minutes later, and I've seen this numerous times in the emergency department. Next up is the Department of Justice settlement. More than 450 hospitals in 43 states agreed to pay more than $250 million to settle claims that ICDs were placed in patients who did not meet NCD criteria. This all started from a whistleblower suit from a cardiac nurse and health consultant in Southern Florida. The DOJ investigations focused on only timing violations, 40-day rule after MI and the 90-day rule after revascularization such as stent and bypass. Now, this is important news because it created an immense culture change in EP labs and cath labs across the U.S. In our cath lab, we now have strict pre-implant criteria for ICDs. If the ejection fraction is 36%, the patient is not going to get an ICD, pretty much, period. That is a primary prevention ICD. If the patient has had a stent, they wait, period. End of story. Now, I've studied this evidence backwards and forwards, and the case for the timing rules are pretty well supported in the literature. But the problem is that sometimes patients fall out, and we're not treating pharyngitis. We're trying to prevent death. Now, society guidelines, ACC, HRS guidelines, have traditionally been less restrictive than the NCD criteria. And at the time that the clinical trials came out 10 years ago, there was great momentum for ICDs. I mean, the device companies were training non-electrophysiologists to put in devices. Key opinion leaders were touting the benefits of ICDs. And there was, I call, irrational exuberance and I think overestimation of the benefits of ICDs. And I think the irony of the situation with ICDs is the gravest overuse of these devices are not so much timing violations, but when we put them in patients with multiple comorbidities or elderly, frail patients who have many other reasons to die besides painless, peaceful, sudden cardiac death. I have no doubt that we're in a better place with ICDs, but I find it sad that it took the DOJ to get us to a better critical appraisal and better understanding of the role of primary prevention ICDs. Next is combat stress and the risk of subsequent diseases. So this study was published in Circulation. It looked at health outcomes of veterans who had suffered severe combat injuries during wartime. And not surprisingly, investigators found that there were significant associations between future risk of coronary disease, hypertension, diabetes, and chronic kidney disease in veterans who had combat injuries. Now, the lead author, Dr. Ian Stewart, said he wasn't surprised there was this association, but he was surprised of the consistency of the response. And what that means, I think, is the worse the injury, the greater the association with future disease. I think this is mentionable because obviously it's important that we recognize the cost of sending young people into war, but also I'm interested in the mechanistic implications here. One possible connection that I can't help thinking about is the role of inflammation. So how often do we see diseases like atrial fibrillation occur after a pneumonia or surgery or some traumatic event? The other thing I think about here is that technology is really good at seeing people through the acute phases of illness. We're really good at that. But the chronic effects may linger. And certainly this study opens up an important area of future investigations. Next up is the story on Dr. Robert Califf as FDA commissioner. So President Obama recently nominated Dr. Robert Califf of Duke University for FDA commissioner. This is a big deal. It's hardly controversial that the FDA has an important job now more than ever as technology is developing more and more innovations. Now, there's been significant criticism of this nomination from groups that cite Dr. Califf's association with medical industry. But I think making the news even bigger was an editorial from Dr. Jeff Drazen, the editor-in-chief of New England Journal, and he came out strongly in favor of Dr. Califf. So did the AHA, so did the ACC, and the American Society of Clinical Oncology. I don't know Dr. Califf, but I've heard him speak multiple times, and he's extremely impressive. Hardwire on Medscape journalist Michael O'Riordan has a superb story covering both sides of this. Now, if I had a minute with the FDA and Dr. Califf, the only thing I would say is I would plead for a higher burden of proof before the FDA lets drugs out on the market. Finally, let's talk about the AHA upcoming. This weekend starts the AHA sessions in Orlando, Florida. This is always a big meeting. The AHA is a vast meeting, different topics from basic science, clinical medicine, resuscitation symposium. This year's biggest news will clearly be the SPRINT trial, which studied a less aggressive versus more aggressive blood pressure control in patients with risk factors. We already know from a controversial press release a couple of weeks ago that there was a relative benefit in the aggressive blood pressure arm, but we haven't heard the results, only the conclusions. So at AHA, we're going to hear the results, we're going to hear the nuances of this study, and there'll be tons of discussion about this. Now, both Steve Stiles from Heartwire on Medscape and I have written preview stories. And at AHA, you can stay tuned to our live blog and our Twitter feed and obviously the news team and our columnists like myself and Melissa Walton Shirley will be keeping the website filled with good stories. So that's it for this week. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.